You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the When It Was Cool Wrestling Podcast, or if you're listening over at F4WOnline.com, WrestlingObserver.com. This is the show you've come to know as Dragon King, Carl, Classic Wrestling Audio Show. Yes, we've been here quite a long time, and we cover classic professional wrestling. We research classic professional wrestling. We talk classic professional wrestling, and we're back around in our rotation of classic wrestling shows to, quite frankly, one of my favorite ones to do. And based on the feedback I get from you, the listener, it's one of your favorite ones to listen to. This is the history of wrestling at Madison Square Garden. So as we rotate our shows around, this one comes up periodically. And we're up to 1901 as we cover every wrestling show ever held at New York's Madison Square Garden. We're at the second Madison Square Garden at this point. And boy, I tell you what, if you are on social media, you're on Facebook or, God forbid, Twitter, number one, you should be following us. Quite frankly, go to the front page of whenitwascool.com, follow all of us. But you know from some of the comments posted, things that Dave Meltzer says on there are often some of the most ignorant reading you'll ever see in your life. Like, people have no clue about the history or goings on of pro wrestling. Turn them on to this series because it's going to blow their mind just how outright worked professional wrestling was back in these early days. How it was, I mean, nobody was fooled by this stuff here. And it's, you know, very inventive entertainment. We'll certainly say that. We've seen everything up to this point, including a corrupt police department getting involved in the matches. You know, giants from overseas, Tarzan men who can't wrestle. We've seen it all. And we're only up to 1901. So let's get started. Again, I reference the book Wrestling in the Garden, Volume 1, 1875 to 1939. This is one of Scott Teal's books. I hope you will choose to order it from my website, whenitwascool.com. Click any of the definitely click the Patreon buttons, but also the Amazon links, and that helps us. It's a super good book. So here we're here February 6, 1901, so we're going to pick our story back up. We've got an attendance of 7,000 people, so that's a pretty good attendance for the second Madison Square Garden here. And we got Greco-Roman wrestling action. We're going to go 1 hour and 25 minutes. The match is stopped at midnight. We have a draw between Ernest Robert. He's one of the early stars of Madison Square Garden. We've been talking a lot about him. Went to a draw with Paul Pons. So these are two very well-known wrestlers. Paul Pons is a great English wrestler. I mean, these are, Ernest Robert has headlined Madison Square Garden numerous times at this point. So this must have been a great shoot fight, right? Well, let's ask the New York Clipper. The alleged wrestling match between Ernest Robert and Paul Pons took place at Madison Square Garden, this city, on Wednesday evening, February 6th. And after they had scrambled about the platform for an hour and 17 minutes without either securing a fall, Police Inspector Thompson ordered it stopped on the ground that it was 12 o'clock midnight, something unheard of previously, save when the wrestling took place on Saturday night. This result confirmed the opinion entertained by many who had been bitten before that there wasn't, and boy, is there a racial slur in this newspaper. Like, whatever one you're thinking, oh my God, in a newspaper they're using that word, yep. Apparently, a common expression at that time was something you can't read in 2022, and I'm not even about to. Let's just say they called it a fixed match in the most offensive way possible. wowed the New York Clipper, even by 1901 standards. Come on now. The display, made tame as it was, proved that all the science was possessed by Robert. Pons, being evidently a novice in the game, he was not. Whether Nurola is any better versed remains to be seen. I have no idea what that's even supposed to mean, but I guess coming up, we've got a wrestler who I'm not familiar with, called Nurola. Now, his opponent is going to be a heck of a name from back in the time, and I don't know. I'm curious to find out who this Nurola was. I think it's going to be another Terrible Turk knockoff is what I think it's going to be. So now, let's go May 7th, 1901. Now let's hope our next newspaper can keep the nastiness out of their mouth. We're going to actually get the report from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Hope they're a little more classy here. May 7th, 1901. Yeah, we got a fall in attendance here. 4,000 this time. So we're 3,000 people down from the previous engagement. Nurola. Now that's spelled N-O-U-R-O-U-L-A-H. Nurola beat Tom Jenkins. Yes, American heavyweight champion at times. Contender for the World Heavyweight Championship for sure. He is the person actually that George Hackenschmidt would win the American Heavyweight Championship from to give himself the title champion of the world, that Tom Jenkins. Nurola beat him 2-0. Title changed hands. Apparently this is a catch-as-catch-can championship. We'll find out maybe more in a minute when we get to the newspaper, providing they can keep it clean here. Nick Elliott went to a draw with Archie Martin in 15 minutes. Hallamar London beat Carl Schmidt in 5 minutes. Billy Lawrence beat Young Muldoon. Like, these young, like, they often had these young characters, Young Gotch, Young Muldoon, people like that. That was basically their version of a new up-and-comer. It was like, you know, in Mexico, like, you know, Puroth Jr. or Raul de Jalisco Jr. or something like that. It wasn't necessarily what most more times than not. If ever it wasn't the son of, but it was the next person believed to be that, you know, that level star. Seldom ever were they, but still, we get a young Muldoon here. So we had several matches on this show. Let's see what the Cleveland Plain Dealer had to say about this. In New York City, May 7th, Nurola Hassan, the, yes, you guessed it, big Turkish wrestler, made short work of Tom Jenkins of Cleveland. The champion wrestler of America. Yes, he's the American heavyweight champion. At Madison Square Garden tonight. He downed Jenkins twice in a catch-as-catch-can match. The first time in 4 minutes, 35 seconds. And the second time in 5 minutes and 2 seconds. So a very quick match. The match was best at 2 out of 3 falls. And Jenkins, while showing a remarkable amount of cleverness, was unable to compete against the enormous weight of his big opponent. There were about 4,000 people in the garden, and George Bothner, the wrestling instructor of the Knickerbocker Athletic Club, acted as referee for all the bouts of the night. Jenkins weighed 195 pounds, and he was solid muscle, too. Get this, Nurola weighed, brace yourself, 346 pounds. He was a fatten back in 1901. No, squashing Tom Jenkins. Nurola was seconded by Martin Julian and two others. George Tony of Detroit and Tom McMahon and Frank Lynch were behind Jenkins. The mat provided did not cover the entire floor of the ring, and George Tully, Jenkins' manager, insisted that no fall should count anywhere other than on the mat. The articles of agreement read that a fall anywhere inside the ring should count, and Julian for Nurola said that the article should be maintained. It was finally agreed that the men would not bang each other's heads against the wooden floor, gentlemen, we all are here, when either was off the mat. Now, Nurola, this is the notes from Scott Teal, so let's see. Nurola Hassan, known as the Human Landslide, won every match but one in America, losing on a foul to Ernest Robert in a Greco-Roman match at New York City, May 24th. 2 days later, he sailed for Europe. Any claim he may have had to an American championship was negated because he wasn't an American. Hallamar London was reported to be Nuralu's wrestling partner. We go now to the New York Times, Tuesday, July 9th, 1901. Fitzsimmons and Rulin to wrestle. Bob Fitzsimmons and Gus Rulin, the heavyweight pugilist, will wrestle tonight at Madison Square Garden. Yes, a wrestling match between two boxers. Ever since the Horton boxing law became extinct, many of the big fighters have turned their attention to wrestling, and tonight's contest is the first in which two aspirants for the championship pugilistic honors have competed. The men have been training for over 4 weeks, and the contest will be under Greco-Roman rules, best two of three falls. Rulin has always claimed that he was a fighter under the old London prize ring rules, which compel a man to be an expert wrestler, than under the rules fathered by the Marquess of Queensberry. All right, so what happens here? Well, for one thing, attendance falls another 1,000 people. July 9th, 1901, attendance was, well, more than 3,000, so maybe not a whole 1,000. Greco-Roman rules, yes, Gus Rulin defeated Bob Fitzsimmons in two straight falls. Eddie Kelly beat Charlie Wilde. Harry Pinsky beat Gus Walters. And in a catch-as-catch-can match, Carl Schmidt drew with Nick Elliott in 30 minutes. This card was originally scheduled to take place on July 2nd. The New York Times reported that the main event was a vigorous, if not altogether scientific, encounter. Fitzsimmons was said to be, at one time, regarded as the pugilist of the world. Yes, the world boxing champion. The year before, Fitzsimmons fought Rulin in a boxing match in the same ring, and Fitzsimmons knocked out his opponent in 6 rounds. Rulin weighed 190 pounds to Fitzsimmons' 160. There were 15-minute breaks between falls. Both men used boxing tactics. All right, I don't have a attendance for our next show, which is going to be over in 1902. So we're going all the way from July of 1901. We're going over a year without a wrestling match. We're going to end up around Thanksgiving. It's one of our, you know, Thanksgiving week early cards here, November 25th, 1902. Catch-as-catch-can for the world heavyweight title to a finish. No hold is barred. It's not for the world heavyweight championship, by the way. They may be calling it that, but that's not what it is yet. Tom Jenkins defeats Joe Carroll in two straight falls, both well-known pro wrestlers. Tom Jenkins certainly was a contender for the world championship and probably the American champion at this point in time. The Cuban Wonder, whose real name apparently is Clarence Bolin, beat Jack Fenton. And I guess his understudy, the Cuban Wonder, I guess he wrestled twice. He also beat Teddy Sitter, so I guess he did double duty there. The world heavyweight champion was an arbitrary distinction. Tom Jenkins was generally acknowledged as the American champion, well, at least until he lost the injury-shrouded decision to Dan McLeod the next month in Worcester, Massachusetts. There were two prominent wrestlers named Joe Carroll during this time. The more notorious one, George M. Marsh, was also known as Joe Carroll. Joe Carroll Marsh and a variety of other aliases. This is the guy who runs scams for Frank Gotch all over the place. And all the way back even to, I think, James H. McLaughlin. Like, they all were running scams in the Yukon and everything else. Let's see what Scott Till has to say about him. He was at the time in Alaska with Frank Gotch. Yeah, Frank Kennedy. The Joe Carroll in the match above was billed as the heavyweight wrestling champion of Ireland, a title which he reportedly won in September of 1902 from Jim Parr. The promoters conveniently overlooked the fact that Parr had thrown Carroll at Buffalo, New York in the fall of 1901, even going so far as to bill the late 1902 tour as Carroll's American debut. Fenton and Sitter were billed as two well-known New York heavyweights, a highly debatable claim. When the referee's decision was debated at the end of the Sitter match, Bolin graciously consented to a do-over with Sitter and flopped him in short order. Bolden had beaten Sitter 5 nights earlier across town on a vaudeville stage at the Star Theater. Now, here's a pretty interesting little article from 1903 from the New York Sun, January 25th, 1903, discussing the popularity of wrestling. So let's see what kind of cues and information we can glean from the popularity of wrestling as reported by a major newspaper in 1903. Wrestling just now is enjoying popularity little dreamed of a year or two ago. In fact, the sport has taken such a firm hold on the public that there is not a school of physical culture in the city that does not cater to this particular branch of exercise. It is not so long ago that wrestling was supposed to be an obsolete pastime. Few persons cared to go and see two robust and powerful men on the mat, no matter what their reputation. Nowadays, however, a struggle between two grapplers of recognized ability will attract a large crowd, and the enthusiasm shown by the spectators is commensurate with the excitement displayed at other contests of strength and skill. I just love the way these old-timey newspapers use this very evocative language. It's just wonderful. Papers should aspire to, well, what few papers are left, should aspire to this same way of writing now. It's wonderful to read. The revival of sport belongs primarily to Billy Brady. 5 years ago, Brady imported a big Turk named Yusuf to this country and matched him against Ernest Robert. At the time, the sport had been dormant for years, and those who heard of Brady's efforts to resuscitate it laughed at him. None of this is really that true, by the way. They predicted that the Turk would be a frost, that Brady would lose money, as no one would care to see his foreign protege show his powers. They were all wrong. And soon another Turk appeared in the field. This was Nerola, equally as big, elephantine, and powerful. Nerola threw everybody he met and made a sensation. The advent of Nerola and Yusuf paved the way and brought other men of prominence to the front. Today, there are nearly as many wrestlers as there are fighters before the public. Of course, the abolition of prize fighting in this state had a great deal to do with aiding the wrestlers. The sport quickly took to the knights of the mat. They will continue to patronize the sport, it's evident, provided no hippodromes or fakes are foisted upon the public. Imagine that. Can't have no fake wrestling here, even though it all is. Thus far, to the credit of promoters, this objectionable feature has been rare. No, it's been present in every case. We've seen example after example of it. I don't know who's writing this article for the New York Sun, but undoubtedly he has been kayfabed. William Aloysius Brady. What do we know about him? 1863 to 1950. The Billy Brady referred to by the Sun was primarily a theater producer and an early partner of Florence Ziegfeld. Brady also became the first man to manage two heavyweight boxing champions, Jim Corbett and James J. Jeffries, also involving them in vaudeville presentations. It's all show business, folks. At the same time, he introduced the first of the Terrible Turks, Yusuf, to the American wrestling scene in 1898, and we've talked at length about him. Now then, back to the matches. 1903, January 31st, 1903. Tom Jenkins is back again. He's our current big headliner at the Garden. Tom Jenkins went to a draw with John Pining. 2 hours and 10 minutes, there were no falls taken. Your undercard has Nick Elliott beat Lewis Whistler in two straight falls. John Kelly went to a draw with Charlie Leonhardt, one fall apiece. Greco-Roman rules, John Kammerer beat Gus Holtz, two falls to one. And Cantez Idone beat Jay Martin, two falls to one. So Jenkins and Penning, the Butcher Boy, as he's called, what a great name, wrestled from 9:50 until midnight when the police inspector Walsh and police captain Miles O'Reilly, that's a New York police officer name if ever has been one. I need a police officer in New York City in 1903. Well, now, lad, we're going to send Captain Miles O'Reilly. I would expect nonetheless. They declared the bout at an end to the previous to prevent any infraction of the Sunday laws. The main event was to have been in mixed styles, the first fall Greco-Roman and the second catch-as-catch-can. As it happened, police imposed a midnight curfew, halting the main event at that hour. So the entire 2 hours, 10 minutes, was contested under Greco-Roman rules. A news report stated Frank Gotch, a Klondike giant, recently arrived, challenged the winner, and posted a forfeit, which was covered by Jenkins. The New York Times stated that neither Lindhart nor Kelly seemed to be over 12 years of age. Referred to them as Lilliputian wrestlers. Some believed Lindhart was the Italian better known as Frank Idone. Well, Frank Gotch may have showed up, but Frank Gotch didn't have much of a tenure there at Madison Square Garden, let me tell you. I don't think he won a single match at Madison Square Garden, if you can believe that. And, like, look, Frank Gotch, he was kind of the Hulk Hogan of that era. Like, he didn't lose much. I mean, a handful of matches his entire career. But no wins at the Garden. That's crazy. March 13th, 1903. Got a handicap match, meaning Tom Jenkins must throw Jack Monroe four times in an hour. Well, he didn't do it. He failed to throw him all them times, so technically Jack Monroe beat Tom Jenkins. The Cuban Wonder is going to wrestle three matches in quick succession. He beats Frank Idone, who they talked about in that last article there, Lewis Miller, and Young Jeffries. Monroe, whose reputation stemmed from staying four rounds in an exhibition bout with boxing champion James J. Jeffrey in Butte, Montana, in December of 1902, tried the mat. In this case, the largest one ever wrestled on. Some 75 feet square. How many of you are wrestlers out there? How many of you are indie stars? How many of you are major professional wrestling stars? 75 feet squared mat. Can you imagine? Are you going to run the ropes on that one? I'd like to see it. Better get in shape. Better do whatever it is Chris Jericho's doing to look like that at 51 years of age. You better be dieting. He managed to avoid being pinned four times in an hour, mostly by running away from Jenkins. The Washington Times reported that Monroe's speed saved him, for he sprinted around on the 70-foot mat as if it were a football game. And Jenkins was after him until he was out of breath. When the hour was up, they were locked on the ground with Jenkins gradually perfecting a half Nelson, with which in another minute he would have scored again. Tom Jenkins' three falls came in 19 minutes, 51 seconds, 20 minutes, 3 seconds, and 17 minutes and 1 second, so he lacked one fall winning the match under the rules presented. The referee was Tim Hurst, the well-known baseball umpire, and he awarded the decision to Monroe. Let's wrap up 1903 as we go to December. Let's see where I'm at on my timer here. Oh, yeah, we got time. December 22nd, 1903. Attendance, 3,500. You notice it's hanging right around the just under the 4,000 mark for attendance here at these shows. Get a catch-as-catch-can match for the World Heavyweight Championship, as it's being called. No holds barred. Tom Jenkins beats Dan McLeod. We referred to this match earlier. Two falls to one. McLeod won the first fall with a stranglehold and a pinfall at 9 minutes 52 seconds. Tom Jenkins took the second fall and third with quarter Nelsons and pins in 22 minutes 13 seconds and then again in 10 minutes 39 seconds. Let's go now to the Washington Times. Yes, the Washington Times, Wednesday, March 15th, 1905. What say the Washington Times? Gotch wrestles Jenkins tonight. Champion next champion meet at Madison Square. New York City. Frank Gotch, the American champion at Catch-as-Catch-Can Wrestling, and Tom Jenkins, the ex-champion, will meet tonight at Madison Square Garden in what is expected to be one of the most scientific and sensational wrestling contests have ever taken place in this city. These were the two biggest American stars at the time. This was whatever today's equivalent is of the two biggest stars in America right now. That's what this was. So, you know, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, whatever, whoever, that's what this was for that era. It's a big deal. The men will struggle to, you'll see this reflected in the attendance too, by the way. Remember, we've been hovering 3,500 to 4,000. Let's see what Frank Gotch and Tom Jenkins can bring to the table here in a minute. Washington Times continues, the men will struggle to a finish, the winner of two falls out of three to get the decision. Pinfalls only will count. No fall on or off the mat will count unless the referee sees fit to bring the men back to the scene of the match. At a meeting of the principals yesterday, Tim Hurst was agreed upon for the referee. Gotch, who won the championship from Jenkins on a foul about a year ago, and who again gained the decision over him recently in Cleveland, is favored in the betting on tonight's contest. Uh-oh. Remember, what's wrestling all about in this time period? Yep, it's fleecing marks, betting on the matches. Who's the favorite? Who's won the last two matches? Who did I just spoil this by a few minutes ago by saying had never won at Madison Square Garden? Can you see where this is going? Jenkins, however, has a host of admirers who are ready to back him heavily. So here we go, March 15th, 1905. Attendance, 3,500, nope. 4,000, nope. 5,000, nope. 10,300 people. Yeah, it's one of the biggest shows we've ever had there at Madison Square Garden. Maybe the biggest. I don't remember. But it's got to be close. Certainly for the second Madison Square Garden it is. American heavyweight title on the line. The champion, Frank Gotch, is defeated by Tom Jenkins. 2-1, 36 minutes, 32 seconds. The title changes hands. Tom Jenkins is once again the American heavyweight champion. Although this is going to set up the world title, the famous Gotch Hackenschmidt world title match later on. This is the first step in that thing taking place. There is also on the undercard a jiu-jitsu match as Professor Waraba Hakyawa takes on Fukioka. I don't have a result for that. Maybe it was just an exhibition. Young Robert beat Young Pons, two straight falls. And Young Hackenschmidt beat George Rulin. So let's go to the newspaper and see what they had to say about this here spectacle. And this will be where we wrap it up. So let's go to the New York Times. Thursday, March 16th, 1905. Tell us all about this, one of the most famous matches in the early days of pro wrestling history. Tom Jenkins pins Gotch in wrestling match. The ex-champion regains honors in Madison Square Garden. Bout was for the championship. The result surprised a big crowd of spectators, most of whom had bet on Gotch. Winner took the first and third falls. Tom Jenkins regained his lost laurels as the wrestling champion of America last night in Madison Square Garden when he threw his young rival, Frank Gotch, in two out of three falls. Tom Jenkins won the first bout in 19 minutes, 34 seconds. Gotch, by the liveliest kind of work, took the second in 6 minutes, 47 seconds. And Tom Jenkins, by steady, consistent work, won the third and deciding bout in 10 minutes, 11 seconds. The actual wrestling time of the three bouts being 36 minutes, 32 seconds. The result was considerable of a surprise, for after Gotch's brilliant exhibition in the second bout, when he had Jenkins completely at his mercy, the opinion was freely expressed that the third bout would go to Gotch in short order. The experts in this case were sadly mistaken, for Gotch at no time displayed the confident aggressiveness that had signified or signally characterized his winning the contest. And being brought first to the mat, he was throughout the bout the underman. The interest in wrestling and in the two famous opponents was attested by the throng of enthusiasts that literally packed all the available sightseeing rooms at the big garden. The boxes in the arena seats were all occupied, and even in the top gallery, rows of faces two and three deep peered over the railing, anxious to get a glimpse of the two big fellows on the mat. Fully 5,000 persons were in the garden, the crowd being typically represented. This one says 5,000, which I don't know where we get 10,300 from earlier, but let's see. Maybe we figure this out. The crowd being typically represented of the best club and sporting element in the city. In this respect, the event was notable in the history of wrestling in America, for it was without a doubt the largest and best crowd that ever gathered in this city to witness a big watch. After some preliminary bouts, and the big men walked out onto the floor shortly before 10 o'clock. The conditions of the match were catch-as-catch-can, the stranglehold only barred, and pinfalls to count. Frank Ernie and William Elmer acted as Gotch's seconds, while George Bothner was the single second for Tom Jenkins. Tim Hurst was the referee. Jenkins weighed just before the match 198 pounds to 190.5 pounds for Gotch. As the men faced each other for the first bout, loud applause greeted them. Nearly 3 minutes was spent in dancing around the match, around the mat, rather. Tom Jenkins was the first brought to the mat by a leg hold, but a minute later, he was on his feet. Jenkins exerted all of his strength to bring Gotch to his knees, but twice the latter squirmed out of it. By a chancery hold, Jenkins succeeded on his third attempt, and a hard tussle followed. Jenkins maintained his advantage and tried to throw Gotch by a hammer hold, but was forced to slip into a half Nelson and finally secured his fall by a combination bar and a half Nelson in 19 minutes 34 seconds. The second fall was the feature of the evening. Frank Gotch had it all to himself. Jenkins was brought to the mat three times, but as he fell or wriggled over the edge, the men were ordered up again. Finally, Frank Gotch got Tom Jenkins down near the center of the mat and then, grabbing him about the waist, lifted him bodily upon his head and proceeded to spin him around like a top. When the men fell, Gotch had Jenkins well caught with a scissors hold about the neck. Still, he was unable to get the fall, and Gotch resorted to his former tactics, picking Jenkins up and hauling him toward the center of the mat when he threw him again with the same hold. This time, Gotch succeeded, and in a minute had pinned Jenkins' big shoulders to the mat with a bar hold in 6 minutes 47 seconds. Pandemonium was let loose, for the excitement of the crowd had been aroused to where Gorilla Monsoon would be pleased that pandemonium had, in fact, been let loose in the garden. The excitement of the crowd had been roused to fever heat by the rapidity of the bout. Jenkins was clearly worn out as he left the floor. It took some time before a clinch in the third bout. Gotch failed to get in as energetically as formerly, and his friends became dubious. Jenkins at last got the desired advantage and kept trying for a back hammer hold. Twice he nearly had Gotch pinned to the mat. A bar hold made matters more dubious for Gotch, particularly as he failed to squirm out of it. And after a final tussle, Gotch won the match by a cross and chancery hold. They got that wrong. It was Jenkins won the match. The contestants quickly left the floor, escorted by a squad of policemen. The crowd filed out, giving various opinions regarding the match. So this was a big, big deal, and it's going to set up a bigger, bigger deal. Because next up, the next thing, when we come back around to this show again, the history of wrestling at Madison Square Garden, we're going into May of 1905, we're going to have George Hackenschmidt against Tom Jenkins. Winner of this match, going to be pretty much the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. What will it be like? How will it go? Well, you already know the answer. I mean, this was like well over 100 years ago, but nevertheless, things are getting really interesting and really exciting in pro wrestling, and especially at Madison Square Garden in New York. Big crowds, big matches, great matches. I mean, clearly a very expertly worked match between Tom Jenkins and Frank Gotch. Obviously, Gotch had beaten him twice before. It's all in the papers, so everybody's betting on Gotch to win again. He gives him a big hope spot in the mid-round. I mean, he comes in and basically dominates Tom Jenkins. But Jenkins ends up getting the win and the American Heavyweight Championship. It's good wrestling. I mean, this is the building blocks of professional wrestling right here. It may have looked different. May not have been in a classic raised ring with ring ropes. It may have been, you know, a lot of just holds and stuff. There wasn't the dramatic, you know, brawling and fighting that it was, you know, so many years later. But this was very exciting, very captivating for the audience at the time, especially a very serious sporting audience, but one that, you know, was kind of in on it. They were much like when I grew up as a fan of wrestling in the late 1970s throughout the 1980s. All the adults knew it wasn't real, but they hoped it was, you know. Certainly would play along, and I think that's really what we see going on back here as well. So I hope you've enjoyed our look back at the early 1900s of Madison Square Garden. When we get back around in this series, we're going to talk again about Hackenschmidt and Jenkins, and it's going to be a big, big deal, one of the really fundamental building blocks of professional wrestling in United States history. Our next show in our rotation of shows coming up next week will be our latest installment of the long-form history of wrestling. We're up in 1983 now. We've been covering that. I have the 1983 issues of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Dave was doing them monthly at this time. And so over at my website, whenitwascool.com, if you're a Patreon supporter, before we do our next show, so sometime between now and next week, we're going to take that issue. We're going to go through it. We're going to take the applicable 1983 issue of the Wrestling Observer, go through it page by page, see what Dave had to say. And then here, if you're Wrestling Observer only, we'll talk about the month in pro wrestling we're up to in 1983. Forget off the top of my head, we're like springtime of 1983. We're going to talk about that in detail. And so I hope you'll check us out over at whenitwascool.com and get that Observer show as well in there. So thank you very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed this fun time. Love these Madison Square Garden shows. Do check us out over at whenitwascool.com, and I'll see you here again soon with another show.
We depend on Patreon support for our website and podcast network. In order to continue these podcasts you enjoy, we need you to visit whenitwascool.com and pledge at least $1. You'll gain access to lots of exclusive podcasts, newsletters, and more. Sign up is quick, simple, and can be canceled at any time. WhenItWasCool.com and click any Patreon link. Thank you.